This is the most unethical sham since I've been in politics. And if you really wanted to know the truth, you sure as hell wouldn't have done what you've done to this guy.
Wow, Senator Lindsey Graham going off on the Democrats during the Kavanaugh hearing. Good morning and welcome in to this Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host, for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. I kept hearing something odd and realized I had my studio speakers on. Little technical weirdness. But other than that, things are fine. How are you today? You doing all right? I hope you're doing well, that all is well with you and yours. Mom and them and the dogs and the cats and everybody. Hope you're doing well and that you're looking forward to a great Thursday. It's Thursday. You know what that means? Yeah, me neither. It's just more of the same. You know, we've got insanity going on in Washington, D.C. The Democrats are doing their resistance thing, trying to keep the nation ungovernable so the president will suffer. That's, by the way, in case you were wondering what this was all about, that's what this is all about. That's it. When you boil it all down, if I may just summarize everything, we can wrap the show up in about 2 minutes and be done with it. And you can go on with your day. What this is all about is the Democrats doing the resistance thing. Remember, right after Trump was elected, the resistance said they were going to make this nation ungovernable. Well, there's not much government going on if you've got the House and the Senate tied up in an impeachment. You see? Okay, we're done. Have a great Thursday. That's what it all boils down to. It's a resistance movement. It's a resistance movement that is set in motion because the progressives didn't get what they wanted. They didn't get to continue what was started under Barack Obama. They didn't get to keep going. You know what I'm talking about. They were working on, I beat this drum so many times, but here it is again.
We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
And that's what they wanted to keep going. They wanted to keep that fundamental transformation of the United States of America going that was started under Barack Hussein Obama. And what happened? Everybody looked at their choices, and the majority of Americans, regardless of what Hillary Clinton claims, the majority of Americans said, ain't no way that woman is going in office to be a puppet for the progressive underground regime again. It's not happening. Well, maybe they didn't say that. Maybe they just said, Hillary? Ew. And voted for Trump. So, but they didn't get what they wanted. And as a result, the resistance movement declared that they would make this country ungovernable. And as a result, what's happened is the Democrats in Congress, in the House and the Senate, have decided to work together almost in total lockstep to tie the president's hands at every turn. He's managed to do an amazing amount of work undoing the damage, done by Barack Obama over 8 years. America is better off. Americans are happier with their economy and the country than they have been by and large for quite some time. Oh, sure, there are some people who are unhappy and who claim that things are terrible and that this president is terrible. But those people, when you actually look at their ideology, what they believe and what they want for this country, those people are nuts and can't be trusted anyway. So there you have it. I digress. I've gotten off into the depth of things, and I didn't want to at the very beginning. I have things to chuckle about and things to learn and the like. For example, a friend of mine, a guy who for quite some time you would find off stage at concert events all over the nation, directing the way things worked on the stage. A guy named Denny Keatsman. Some of you know Denny. I lovingly, and I please understand that this is a loving reference. I refer to Denny Keatsman as the stage Nazi. He's the guy that calls all the shots on a stage at a concert. And I have, in the radio business, I'd run into to Denny a couple of times. And then when I went to work for SDEA, I got more acquainted with Denny because he managed the stage, so to speak, for a handful of things that we did, specifically when we owned and operated Atlanta Fest, the Christian Music Festival at Stone Mountain, Georgia. Denny Keatsman was the man who managed the stage. Here's an example from the radio days. When Dave Mack and I walked up to the stage to MC a concert at one point during our radio show in Birmingham, or at the time we were on in Birmingham for nearly 6 years, we met Denny Keatsman at the side of the stage. Hey, happy smiles, handshake, how you doing? We're from the radio station. We're here just to, we know nobody paid to come see us, so we're not going to take much time on your stage. He said, okay. Just kind of nods his head. Okay. And he hands us each a wireless mic and says, here are your microphones. When you walk out on stage, you'll see there is a flat panel screen to one side of the stage. There will be a timer counting down. When it hits zero, you're done. Denny had dealt with a lot of radio goobs. He had dealt with a lot of radio people who felt like it was their time in the spotlight, and they were there to promote their radio station, their radio show, their everything. And honestly, those people didn't pay $40, $50, $60 a seat or more sometimes to walk into the auditorium and see the radio twits on the stage. That's not who they were there to see. The radio guys were there to give something away and speaking from experience, were handed something off stage by the concert promoter to pump up for the next thing coming to town. And you have a very short window of time. And that's what Denny made sure of. He also, there was one time, there's this infamous story where he's dealing with a band at a festival. And at festivals are different than your average concert. At a concert, they come in and they set up for an opening act and they set up for the main act. The main act comes in first, sets everything up the way it has to be set up, and then that's what they can move is moved back out of the way, and the opening act then comes in and sets up for their opening act. And they're given instructions on how to grab what, who has to grab what. They have stage crew who will come in. They have, roadies and the like, and they'll also have stage crew that'll come in and grab guitars, amps, whatever is on the stage that has to be moved, and move it out of the way, and then situate the main act stuff while the intermission music is playing and all that other stuff, or the curtain is down or the lights are down or whatever. That's what's happening on the stage when you see all those flashlights and everything. If you go to a concert, they're resetting for the main act. Well, at a music festival, it's different. You may have 8, 10, 12 different bands or singers throughout the day. And that means the main act of the night has to come in early, early in the morning, set all their gear up, and then it gets pushed back. And then every other performing act comes in in reverse order, sets up, does their sound check. Everything is programmed into the console, into the audio console, for how they like things, and memorized and set into a file off to one side, and then their stuff is pushed to the back. And so on. It goes on like that for everybody. And everybody gets a sound check. Not a rehearsal. A sound check. And the least professional, least experience, those with the least amount of experience will come in and think they're getting a rehearsal. And they'll try to go through complete songs. And that's not why they're there. They are there to tell the crew they can hear what they need to hear while they're on stage. My guitar sounds fine. My voice sounds fine. Can I have some more drums? A little less bass, please. That sort of a thing. Usually they have wedge monitors on the stage facing them, and that's what they're working with. Sometimes they have in-ears, and they tune everything up for their thing, and they have to do it quick and get off the stage. And Denny, at one point, finally got fed up, stood there with his arms crossed in front of this band, and finally said, "All, I want you all on your mics now. Get on your mics. I'm going to point at each one of you. You tell me you need more, less, or, oh my gosh, that's the best thing I've ever heard. That's all I want to hear." That's how he ran his stage. And I knew that to be true when I heard it because of my experience. Okay, boys, here are your microphones. You have this much time, then you're done. I knew it to be true. Well, Denny, bless his heart, I love him. I think he's retired now. He's living somewhere in the hills and posts on social media about his motorcycle and things like that from time to time. And he posted yesterday, this is what he said. The biggest thing I'm getting from the Senate Q&A session is how many of the men have male pattern baldness. Because the camera is looking down on everybody from the upper level. You can see how many of these guys should be just giving up and shaving their heads, you know? And you can tell which one of them are suffering from vanity and have gone to get hair plugs. Thank you, Denny. I appreciate that. Also, yesterday, the question of the day. You know, I like to pass these along to you from time to time because I think the information is good, because a lot of times it challenges what the word on the street kind of is. You know, you see in social media all these claims about what's what. And when the folks at Just Facts Daily post a question of the day, it's usually to debunk something that everybody just assumes. And here was yesterday's. If the federal government raised the minimum wage by more than 100%, from $7.25 an hour to $15 an hour, how much would this increase the average annual reported cash income of families below the poverty line? Now, you know, we hear this all the time. That term, the living wage, that these people working the counter at Mackey D's, those people that can't seem to get your order right or speak English properly, please don't write me. You know exactly what I'm talking about. These people who can't communicate effectively, who don't understand you and can't be understood by you. These people want $15. They can't get you end up walking back to the counter because they left something off or included something wrong on your order. And it happens with frightening frequency, if you know what I mean. I've told you the story. I know about my wife and I stopping at a Hardee's and ordering a very simple order. And my wife always gets her hamburgers plain, just the meat and the bread. It's a cheeseburger with nothing else, just the bun, meat, and bread. That's the way she likes it. And the cook was so confused, he came out of the back and to our table and asked her to clarify what she wanted. And still there was something wrong when we got it. Amazing. But that's got to get $15 an hour. If the federal government raised the minimum wage by more than 100% or from $7.25 an hour to $15 an hour, how much would this increase the average annual reported cash income of families below the poverty line? Would it be less than 25%, between 25 and 50%, or more than 50%? How much of an increase would they get? Less than 25%, 25 to 50, or more than 50? The answer is less than 25%. A 2019 study by the Congressional Budget Office found that raising the minimum wage from $7.25 per hour to $15 per hour would increase the average annual reported cash income of families below the poverty line by about 5.2%, or $589 for the year on average. It also found that such a law would give 80% of the resultant salary increase to families above the poverty line and would increase joblessness, reduce business income, raise prices, and lower total output in the economy. So the CBO study shows that the fight for 15 is a fight for defeat. The fight for 15 would increase, if they won, would increase the joblessness rate. It would reduce the income of business. Businesses have to have a certain amount of income to stay open. It would raise prices, which would run customers off, and it would lower the total output in the economy. So raising the minimum wage from $7.25 to $15 an hour would be would be damaging, if not devastating, to the economy. It would hurt more people than it would help. The fight for 15 is based on gross ignorance, as are most fights coming from the left for something. They're based in assumptions and gross disinformation. In fact, most such efforts are based in an effort to divide one set of people against another set of people. They're wedges driven into our society to anger people and get them focused on a cause rather than on the facts. So just remember that the next time you see somebody fighting for 15, if they get what they want, odds are it's going to hurt them more than it's going to help them. More after the break.
Oh, yeah!
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. It's the Thursday edition of the Poke Little Podcast, and it's good to have you along today. Thank you very much for being there. Well, it seems that the story about Don Lemon and his Chuckle Buddy panel just will not go away. He's actually offered up what I think he believed was an apology. We'll look at that in a couple of minutes. But first up, I want to play for you what occurred between Tucker Carlson and Mark Stein the other night. Was it yesterday? Was it last night? I don't know when this was. Anyway, they were talking about Don Lemon and the way he and his panel of chucklers were mocking Trump supporters. And Mark Stein's view on things is usually comical, and it's worth a laugh or two. But I think it's important to hear what these guys had to say, because this is a story that's not going away.
Cable News has struggled to get the American public to care as much as they're required to about impeachment in Ukraine and Russia. This might be worth some reflection. Maybe other stories are more important to people who live here, like the fact they're dying younger. Oh, no. For Don Lemon over on CNN, there's an easier answer. Ordinary people are stupid, unlike Don Lemon, stupid.
And look, he also knows deep in his heart that Donald Trump couldn't find Ukraine on a map if you had the letter U and a picture of an actual physical crane next to it. He knows that this is, you know, an administration defined by ignorance of the world. And so that's partly him playing to their base and playing to their audience, the credulous boomer rube demo that backs Donald Trump, that wants to think that Donald Trump's a smart one, and they're y'all elitists are them.
Only them elitists know where Ukraine is.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of lessons you can take from that tape, which is all over the internet, and you should play it again and again because it tells the whole story of the moment we're living in. First and most obviously, once again, the things they're accusing you of, not generally, but specifically, are exactly the things they're guilty of themselves. They're projecting, they're externalizing their own internal problems and neuroses and laying them at your feet. You're a racist, say people who attack you for your skin color. You're an idiot, says Don Lemon and that other guy with the beard. Again, Don Lemon. This is the man, and we're not making this up, who once questioned out loud whether a missing airliner might have flown into a black hole.
This is precious.
What if it was hijacking or terrorism or mechanical failure or pilot error? But what if it was something fully that we don't really understand? A lot of people have been asking about that, about black holes and on and on and on. They're also referencing the Twilight Zone, which has a very similar plot. That's what people are saying. I know it's preposterous, but is it preposterous, you think, Mary?
Don Lemon, the man who sincerely believes that the fruit-based cold dessert is pronounced sorbet, calling you stupid. We're joined tonight by author and columnist Mark Stein, who is a connoisseur of moments like this. It's great to see you, Mark. So, as a rube who lives in rural America, how are you responding to this?
Yeah, that's CNN flying the Democrats into the black hole. If you want more Trump, this is how you get more Trump. They
exactly.
they might as well relabel that panel the Trump re-election committee. That's what they're doing here. This is actually the bipartisan establishment condescension summed up completely. 63 million people are credulous rubes, according to these guys. By the way, the black hole theory isn't... things like that come by every day on CNN and MSNBC. Just the other day, Lawrence O'Donnell suggested that Trump droned Soleimani as a favor to John Bolton so that Bolton would agree not to testify in the Senate impeachment.
Larry McDonald went to Harvard. I don't think he would say he went to Harvard. It's Harvard,
right. Exactly.
Wow.
And, you know, it's not going to stop there. Next thing, if Bolton doesn't go for that, Trump might have to drone Justin Trudeau. That's what they talk about on CNN and MSNBC. And they're the ones who say that the 63 million people are just credulous rubes. I'd be interested if Hunter Biden could find Ukraine on a map, and he's made millions of dollars from that joint.
Also, like Chris Cuomo, a Yale graduate. Did you go to Yale, Mark?
Right.
I don't think you're smart enough to go to Yale. Are you?
No. I certainly couldn't. I certainly don't have this is the idiocy of this. That you're. It's not a public policy difference anymore. It's just that they're stupid. It used to be that just Republican presidents were stupid.
Yes.
Now they're saying that tens of millions of Americans are stupid.
Yes.
And in a democratic age, that's actually not going to help the people who advance that theory.
Imagine thinking that anyway. I mean, it's a deeply uncharitable, inhumane, cruel way to look at your own country. And it's hard to imagine people feel that way.
It's like a hot mic moment. That's what's so weird. It's like they're talking in the commercial break and they don't realize they're on air. And that's how they really think of millions of their countrymen. And actually his line, Rick Wilson's stupid line, he's a Republican Party strategist. Republican voters give money to the Republican Party and the Republican Party gives it to idiots like Rick Wilson. Bipartisan nonsense is why we're where we are today.
Exactly. Man, we missed you last week. Mark Stein, welcome back. Thank you.
Hey, great to be with you, Tucker.
Thank you.
Wow. And that was Tucker Carlson and Mark Stein on what's happening with Don Lemon, as Tucker would say. And Mark Stein is right. This is the general attitude. It was like an open mic moment. I said so the other day. I said so that this was like what would be happening when the cameras are off. And when you watch this segment, and I've watched it several times, when you watch the segment and you see Rick Wilson's gag, his joke about the letter U with a picture of a crane, that is when Don Lemon loses it. And he's laughing. He's laughing all through the commentary. So that joke is what set him off. But he can hear everything that's going on. He's responsible for being the moderator. It's his responsibility to assure that things don't go in the ditch. That's his job. And yet, he's claiming something a little bit different. He's actually gone on television to address this viral video that mocks Trump voters.
And one final note that I have for you, because this is personally important to me to address this, okay? Anyone, ask anyone who knows me, they'll tell you, I don't believe in belittling people, belittling anyone for who they are, for what they believe, or where they're from. During an interview on Saturday night, one of my guests said something that made me laugh. And while in the moment, I found that joke humorous. And I didn't catch everything that was said.
Lie.
Just to make this perfectly clear, I was laughing at the joke and not at any group of people.
And Everybody believes you, Mr. Lamon. Sure they do. He was laughing at the joke.
And one final note that I have for you, because this is personally important to me to address this, okay?
Okay.
Anyone, ask anyone who knows me. They'll tell you. I don't believe in belittling people, belittling anyone for who they are, for what they believe, or where they're from.
Unless they're the president, and you do that all the time. And unless they're someone who works for the president, and you do that all the time. And when the camera's on, actually, maybe he should have said...
Anyone, ask anyone who knows me. They'll tell you. I don't believe in belittling people, belittling anyone for who they are, for what they believe, or where they're from.
When the camera's on. Maybe that was the words he should have added to that. He doesn't believe in belittling anyone for anything when the camera's on. Was this supposed to be an apology? No, it's not an apology. It's a justification. It's very clearly a, you don't understand, let me explain. Condescension. It is a progressive talking down to the audience, is what this is. He hasn't been caught doing anything wrong. He finds himself in a situation where he needs to explain to the idiots what really went on. I'm not really that person. You know that. People who know me, just ask them. Who are you going to believe me? Who are you going to believe? Them or your lying eyes?
So crazy someplace else. We're all stocked up here.
Yeah, we are stocked up with crazy. It is a it's a Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. Just here skimming through things. And, of course, I'm scrolling through this Twitter page. And while I'm scrolling down through this Twitter page, the video that I'm going to play for you next, so you'll hear the audio of it, has decided it wants to play. So, and we deal with that. Okay. I hope you have a good day ahead for you today. My day will be much like yesterday. I found myself late in the afternoon, early evening, blankly staring at the computer screen because my brain had run out of gas. You ever get to that point where you stare at something and you're not solving the problem anymore? You're just replaying the same thing over again in your head? That's the point I got to. And I decided, oh, okay, it's time to push away. Now, my wife had come home from her job at that point and everything, and I'm just like, wow, how late is it? Holy cow, I'm out of here. So I stopped for the day. It's just, I've been working on a website, and I'm familiar with the platform we're building the website on, and but I'm not all that familiar with the package that builds the website. So it's taking a little getting used to. And if you have had anything to do with HTML or web design, or you've worked with WordPress or anything like that, there's one little niggly thing that's driving me nuts. And I can't get past this one thing. I could probably have built half the website by now, but there's this one little thing that I'm stuck on, and I want to change. There's a menu, and the font in the menu is wrong. The type style in the menu is wrong. It doesn't match anything else on the website, and I can't find how to change the font. I've done everything. I've done system-wide font changes. I've done all kinds of stuff. I'm using the Google Fonts package. I'm using all this. There's just nothing works. And today I think I'm going to seek professional assistance of one form or another. I mean, they're going to get these people, that visual composer, to explain themselves to me, or I'm going to make an appointment myself and get an adjustment of some kind. One of the two. But that's what my day will be like today. Well, back to the lunacy that's not my personal lunacy. We keep hearing from the Democrats that they want to hear from John Bolton. Bolton, Bolton, Bolton. Because someone leaked a portion of the manuscript of his book to the New York Times. And now the Democrats have decided that this man, they decided not to call as a witness in the House. And by the way, if you look into that, maybe we'll have time to look into that. I hope we do, because I've got it here in the stack of stuff. When you look at how that happened, they declined to call him. It wasn't that he declined. They decided not to call him. It wasn't worth the hassle in the courts. Remember, we talked about this before. They could have gone to the courts and had the courts decide to call certain people like John Bolton. They decided, no, we don't want to do that. We must move forward quickly. They decided not to. He would have come. They knew they had to go to the courts to make it happen. They decided not to call him. But now that this little leak is out, which we honestly don't know whether it's true or not, whether it's actually there or not, or someone's just making it up, now that this has hit the fan, they're ready to roaring to have him on the witness stand and drill him. They want to find out how dirty Trump actually is because they've got somebody who will actually talk. Well, he's already talked. Yeah. He's already talked. In fact, there was an interview. And here's a portion.
Follow up to my visit last year on Independence Day, where I was really honored to have a chance to participate in that. And now with the new government in Ukraine, to see what might be possible going forward on a whole variety of fronts.
Do you plan to meet President Zelensky, and what messages did you bring to him?
Well, I will be meeting President Zelensky. He and President Trump have already spoken twice. President called to congratulate President Zelensky on his election and then on his success in the parliamentary election. They were very warm and cordial calls. We're hoping that they'll be able to meet in Warsaw and have a few minutes together.
Wait a minute. Let's go back just a little.
Congratulate President Zelensky on his election and then on his success.
Wait. Back a little further.
President called to congratulate President Zelensky on his election and then on his success in the parliamentary election. They were very warm and cordial calls.
Warm and cordial calls.
Hoping that they'll be able to meet in Warsaw and have a few minutes together, because the success of Ukraine, maintaining its freedom, its system of representative government, a free market economy free of corruption, and dealing with the problems of the Donbass and the Crimea are high priorities here, obviously, but high priorities for the United States as well.
Warm and cordial calls. So Bolton is on record then, this was August of 2019, as saying that everything was both hunky and dory between the president of the United States and the new president of Ukraine. That's interesting. I think it's interesting. Warm and cordial. But that's not all. The Democrats are having a hissy fit to get him in so that they can hear from him, because he's trusted and valuable. But that's not what they always thought.
Do you think John Bolton would be trusted by the world community as UN ambassador?
Mr. Bolton has been AWOL. He's more focused on the next job than doing well at the last job. And particularly given the history where we've had the politicization of intelligence over WMD, why we would pick someone who the very same issue has
Adam
been raised
Schiff,
repeatedly, and that is John Bolton's politicization of the intelligence he got on Cuba and on other issues. Why would we want someone with that lack of credibility? I can't understand.
And I think you want someone that can find a way to patch up the differences and put together a working, solvent, effective United Nations, where the United States can play a respected role of leadership. I don't see this man doing that. I will not vote for him. What was dispositive for me was a letter that I received signed by 60 former ambassadors, which in essence said, don't do it, and laid out a rationale for that conclusion.
But I think it's clear,
Joe Biden,
that there is no one of prominence that could have been picked by this president, who the rest of the world leadership who focuses on us, as well as my colleagues, think is the least likely person to engender support.
And it seems to me that the type of person you would send to be our ambassador to the United Nations would be a uniter, not a divider, would be someone who can get along, who can work with colleagues, who has an understanding and appreciation and is able to practice diplomacy. I don't see that in John Bolton.
And so there was the opinion of the Democrats on John Bolton back when it was being decided that he would represent us at the UN. So they didn't like the man then. They didn't trust the man then. They didn't trust him or his judgment then. And they had lots to say about that in interviews at the time. Bless their hearts. Bless their hearts. Pick a lane, people. You can't have it both ways. The reason they're so anxious to see him now is because it's politically expedient for them. It would work to their advantage for him to come in so that they can interview him and then misrepresent everything he says. Remember what happened in the House? If you watched the House interviews, they had five people that they interviewed. And what you heard with your own ears was people saying that they had not been involved in the situation. They knew nothing about the conversation between Zelensky and Trump, except what they had been told by others, except for one person. One ambassador, Sondman. Remember him? He said that he spoke with the president personally and asked him what he wanted from this. And the president said, I want no quid pro quo. I want nothing. All I want is for this president of the Ukraine to do what he ran on, to drain their swamp. That's what he wanted. He said, I want nothing. And he said so before these people. Now, what the Democrats said after those interviews didn't resemble what you or I heard during those interviews. They selectively picked what they wanted to talk about, and that's what they talk about. And when it comes to Adam Schiff, he just makes things up out of thin air. And he's done so before the Senate, did so answering questions yesterday. I'm not sure we'll have time to get to that. I wish we had time. But Ted Cruz had something to say from PJ Media. The timing of the lightning-quick House impeachment inquiry is coming back to haunt Democrats again, as they now cry about desperately needing former White House National Security Advisor John Bolton to testify. As Adam Schiff gamely tried to explain the need to hear from Bolton now during their question and answer period during Wednesday's impeachment trial, it's good to remember that Schiff just blew off Bolton to speed to an impeachment vote. Bolton offered to testify. I mentioned this earlier. But Schiff, in such a hurry to get the impeachment out by Christmas, forsook the inevitable court battle it would take to determine if he would be under executive privilege. In his podcast Tuesday, Senator Ted Cruz, by the way, this podcast, Cruz's podcast, I hear, is tremendous. It's like the number one podcast in America today. It's just amazing. He said instead of fighting to get Bolton to testify in the House impeachment inquiry, House Democrats, quote, affirmatively went to the district court in writing and said, we don't need John Bolton. This is what I was talking about a while ago. They said, no, we don't need him. They actually, in writing, sent to the district court. They said, we don't need John Bolton. But now they do. Why? Because of that very fishy transcript release. It's all very fishy. It's all very suspect. And because of that, they want to bring him in. And if they get their way, which I don't think they will, then they will misrepresent what he says, twist it, and shape it to their advantage.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.
Yep. The internet's a valuable source of information. It really is. I mentioned Ted Cruz's podcast. It's called Verdict with Ted Cruz. There are 9 episodes out now. It looks like it's coming. It's not coming out every day. I'm looking here. There was one yesterday, 2 days before that. Let's see, the 28th, the 27th, the 25th, the 24th. Coming out every, it's not daily, but it's available all over the place. And I would recommend you give it a listen. It's called Verdict with Ted Cruz. Back to the story we were talking about a while ago. Schiff was asked about Bolton testifying during yesterday's impeachment trial. And he switched his story. He said, yes, we asked John Bolton to testify in the House and he refused. But we asked his deputy, Dr. Kupperman, to testify, and he refused. Fortunately, we asked their deputy, Fiona Hill, to testify, and she did. We asked her deputy to testify, Colonel Vindman, and he did. But we did seek the testimony of John Bolton as well as Dr. Kupperman, and they refused. Schiff's latest explanation is in contrast to the Wall Street Journal's reporting of the event last November. The Wall Street Journal says House Democrats didn't try to compel former National Security Advisor John Bolton to testify Thursday in the impeachment probe of President Trump, holding their fire as a federal court plans to rule soon on whether another former White House official can avoid cooperating with lawmakers. The decision was not to subpoena Mr. Bolton indicated that House Democrats are eager to keep the inquiry on a fast track. Remember that the decision not to subpoena Mr. Bolton indicated that House Democrats are eager to keep the inquiry on a fast track and don't want to get bogged down in legal fights. The move deprives Mr. Bolton of a legal avenue to challenge a subpoena and puts pressure on him to accept the ruling in a separate case that raises the same legal question of whether close presidential advisors are entirely immune from testifying. The House retracted its subpoena to Kupperman this week, and that's part of the reason why the House hasn't subpoenaed Bolton to avoid the start of yet another court battle. So according to the Wall Street Journal, Schiff just told a bald-faced lie in saying, yes, we asked John Bolton to testify in the House, and he refused. In fact, Schiff used Bolton's question to the district court about his legal options as a reason to charge the president with obstruction of Congress in the impeachment proceeding. The Wall Street Journal reported, we regret Mr. Bolton's decision not to appear voluntarily, but we have no interest in allowing the administration to play rope-a-dope with us in the courts for months, he said. He goes on to say, rather, the White House instruction that he not appear will add to the evidence of the president's obstruction of Congress. Now, in his podcast on Tuesday, Senator Cruz warned his colleagues that the issue isn't about Bolton. It's about a fishing expedition. He says, in the House, John Bolton went to a district court, and he said he was willing to testify, and he asked the district judge, what should I do? Because the White House has told me not to. The House wants me to. And the House of Representatives affirmatively went to the district court in writing and said, we don't need John Bolton. They never subpoenaed him, and they withdrew their request and said, we're not asking for him. And I said, look, I understand for senators, they're agonizing, and the media will beat you up, will beat up on you and say, don't you really want to be fair and call him? If they wanted to call John Bolton, they could have tried, and they decided they didn't need his testimony. This is not about John Bolton or any one witness. This is about delaying and engaging in a fishing expedition. Cruz predicted that, like the Kavanaugh hearing, there will be a breathlessly presented bombshell every day for the rest of the trial. He said, that if Bolton is called as a witness, that he's extremely confident that we will hear from Hunter Biden. There's zero chance that Bolton will be the only witness called, and Democrats are terrified about that. Cruz said senators should keep an eye on the actual legal question of were there high crimes and misdemeanors committed? He warned that it's not an impeachable offense to investigate credible reports of corruption. He's right about that. He's also right that there will be breathlessly presented bombshells at every opportunity. In fact, Adam Schiff himself said when he stood in front of the Senate and lied to them yesterday, he also said, there's information being revealed every day. There's new information surfacing every day. That's one of the things he said. So he has laid the groundwork for more things to be revealed. Because, as Cruz said, this is a fishing expedition. And as I've said, this is not about justice. It's not about law. This is about undermining a president. This is all about making the nation ungovernable, if at all possible. It's about tying our Congress up in useless, pointless, baseless things. Because when they're tied up doing that, they can't keep dismantling what Barack Obama did to this country. Now, during the question and answer session for the Senate impeachment trial, Senator Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham asked House impeachment managers if former President Barack Obama would have had the authority to ask Ukraine to investigate hypothetical corruption surrounding his Republican opponent in 2012, Mitt Romney. Representative Adam Schiff struggled to answer the question. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts read the question from Cruz and Graham. Quote, in Mr. Schiff's hypothetical, if President Obama had evidence that Mitt Romney's son was being paid $1 million per year by a corrupt Russian company, and Mitt Romney had acted to benefit that company, would Obama have authority to ask that potential corruption be investigated? Wow, what a great question. Rather than directly answering, Schiff first attacked the hypothetical, saying, well, first of all, the hypothetical is a bit off because it presumes that in that hypothetical that President Obama was acting corruptly, or there was evidence he was acting corruptly with respect to his son. Schiff clearly meant to say the question presumes that former Vice President Joe Biden was acting corruptly and pressuring Ukraine to fire the prosecutor looking into his son's company. He continued, but nonetheless, let's take your hypothetical on its terms. Would it have been impeachable if Barack Obama had tried to get Medvedev to do an investigation of Mitt Romney, whether it was justified or unjustified? The reality is, for a president to withhold military aid from an ally, or in the hypothetical, to withhold it to benefit an adversary, to target their political opponent, is wrong and corrupt, period. End of story. And if you allow a president to rationalize that conduct, rationalize jeopardizing the nation's security to benefit himself because he believes that his opponent should be investigated by a foreign power, that is impeachable. Now, if you have a legitimate reason to think that any U.S. person has committed an offense, there are legitimate ways to have an investigation conducted, yada, yada, yada. He basically twisted things, turned things around, and then took up the narrative, the lie that they have been presenting all this time. He refused to directly answer the hypothetical. He concluded, but under no circumstances do you go outside of your own legitimate law enforcement process to ask a foreign power to investigate your rival, whether you think there's cause or you don't think there's cause. Wow. Would that condemnation also apply to the Obama DOJ, which coordinated with British intelligence in the early stages of the Crossfire Hurricane investigation into potential ties between the Trump campaign and Russia? Schiff's decision to dodge the hypothetical and condemn what he claims Trump did was ironic, because while there's no concrete evidence that Trump engaged in a quid pro quo of withholding military aid from Ukraine in exchange for investigations into potential Biden corruption, Joe Biden himself bragged about threatening to withdraw Ukraine funding in exchange for the firing of a prosecutor who was investigating the corrupt Ukrainian gas company Burisma, where his son served on the board. Joe Biden has claimed that his pressure to get the prosecutor fired had more to do with encouraging Ukraine to crack down on corruption than with protecting his son's company. But the investigation into Burisma was ended after the prosecutor was fired. The investigation was ended. So how could it be more about corruption if the investigation ended when the prosecutor got canned? That was the purpose of firing the prosecutor, to end the investigation. Of course, this apparent corruption would not necessarily violate a specific U.S. law, but it would represent an abuse of power on Biden's part. So it's very clear to people who are honest with themselves and honest about life in general, just basic honest people, it's very clear that what was going on with Biden was corruption. He was protecting his son, who was making $1 million a year from Burisma. And Adam Schiff is doing everything he can, doing the backstroke and scrambling and ahing and ahing and thinking on his feet, trying to explain something that he can't explain without getting people in a lot of trouble. He's doing what he can to cover for the corruption. By the way, Adam Schiff has also received money from Ukraine, from oligarchs in Ukraine, as have other Democrats who are key in this process. You do a little homework, you find out there are a lot of people who have gotten their coffers lined with cash from Ukraine. It's hoped that many of these people will be revealed for the corrupt crooks they actually are in the very near future. That's it for today, folks. Have a good one. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the Friday edition of the Daily Perspective. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.